This year's planning reflects both the lessons of a shifting operational landscape and our long-term vision for growth and resiliency. Revenue highlights. Our revenue streams remain diversified to ensure financial stability. Lease revenues from building and property tenants are projected to generate $3.4 million. With existing four properties nearing full occupancy, we continue to explore opportunities to expand and enhance our footprint to support increased and improved leasing options. Peer-related income in the prior fiscal year, 23-24, was strong, bolstered by several large vessels making multi-day stops over traffic. Vessel traffic has slowed in the current year, and cruise cancellations have impacted budget projections. At this time, the port is optimistic about the issues behind those cancellations and have resolved and anticipate the potential return of larger vessels in future seasons. The 2024 agreement for the Pier 1 log export operation initially brought in additional revenue, but activity has declined and a rent abatement was implemented in early 2025. As a result, the upcoming budget includes no projected income from log export operations, as the future is quite uncertain. Elsewhere, the boatyard continues to perform well, with the upcoming year expected to set new records in haul-out activity as well as profit. The marina is projected to maintain steady income despite a slight dip in fuel profits. At the airport, fuel sales remain solid. The fiscal year 26 budget is conservative but anticipates fuel profit growth over prior years. Investment priorities. The budget allocates funds across three core areas: operations, capital improvements, and debt service. Operational expenses total just over $9 million and cover staffing, utilities, maintenance, and general operating and administrative costs. The budget for materials and services is approximately $634,000 below current year estimates, primarily due to reduced operating costs with peer activities. Capital investment remains a key focus in the upcoming fiscal year, with the rehabilitation of Pier 2 West as the port's top priority, backed by $27.5 million in combined federal and state grants, including funding from the U.S. Department of Transportation and Business Oregon. The project is currently in the permitting and design phase, with the majority of funds becoming available at the start of construction. Additional funds are being set aside for emergency repairs on both the west and east sides of the piers to maintain safe access and uninterrupted use of these critical areas. In addition to Pier 2, the port has been awarded or anticipates funding through Business Oregon, the Oregon Department of Aviation, and the Federal Aviation Administration for other critical infrastructure improvements. The port, in partnership with Atlin Investments, is advancing plans for a transformative redevelopment of the central waterfront and underutilized area between Pier 1 and the Astoria Mega Bridge. This initiative aims to revitalize the area by introducing new opportunities for commerce, tourism, and community engagement. The upcoming year will focus on strategic planning, design, and strengthening partnerships, laying essential groundwork for future development. Opportunities ahead. The port faces challenges, including rising costs for materials and labor, regulatory complexities, and the need to balance economic growth with environmental preservation. However, opportunities abound. Astoria's strategic location, vibrant tourism sector, and a robust fishing seafood industry position us to capitalize on emerging markets. Partnerships with local businesses and regional agencies will amplify our impact, fostering a resilient economy. Community commitment. This budget is more than a financial plan, it's a reflection of our values. By investing in our infrastructure, workforce, and environment, we aim to honor Astoria's maritime heritage while building a sustainable future. Thank you for your support and partnership. Together, we will ensure the Port of Astoria remains a vital economic engine for our community.
Any comments from anybody about that?
I think it's very well done.
Okay, then we'll proceed to the proposed budget.
We need a motion to accept that message. try to go through the packet and highlight important areas and make sure that there's the opportunity for questions and that everybody understands the material that's presented. So I'm going to go through it, and you can stop me at any time if you have questions, or we can wait until the end of the review. I'm going to start on page 7 of the packet. This is the introduction. I want to point out, when we talk about budget comparisons in the third paragraph, we're primarily looking at the full prior fiscal year, July 2023 to June 2024. We also look at the budget for the current year, July 2024 to June 2025. And then there's some references to current year trends, which would be July through March of this year. Okay. When we look at the budget process graphic, just so everybody's on the same page, we are meeting, and then next week the committee will reconvene to approve the budget, and then passed on to the commission for adoption. Okay. Moving to the budget overview on page 8. So this graphic, I think is just helpful for people that don't understand the Port of Astoria to kind of see where some of the big dollars are coming from. And this is focusing on our operating revenues. I do want to point out that the rebuild expense revenue numbers are very high, but there's a lot of offsetting expense for that. And then for fuel sales at the airport and the marina, again, there's $2 million in outlay, but there's about $2 million in income, but about $1.3 million in expense. So that net's a lot lower. And then looking at expenditures, you'll see the $6 million in capital outlay, $5.3 million in materials and services, and then about $3.6 million in personal services. Those are the biggest, and $1.6 million in debt service. And then breaking out materials and services a little bit more, we can see where the pieces of that pie. So about 40% is utilities. But again, I do want to say that a lot of those utility costs are rebuilt. So there are big numbers in the budget for utilities. The seafood processors use a lot of water, and the Port is able to recapture a lot of that expense. Okay, so any questions about those? Big overview of big dollars. Okay. So moving to page 10 of your packet. So I want to start by sort of tying it all together. So this budget introductory packet is a narrative, but what it ties to, if you wanted to flip ahead to page 25, you're going to see that this is the actual budget. So starting on page 25 are the numbers. That we're approving today, the budget numbers. This is what's called an LB-20 form here. It's a template provided by the Oregon Department of Revenue, and it lists all the estimated budgets and resources by department. Okay? So I'm not really going to reference back to these that much, but everything that I talk about today should tie to these numbers. Okay. So, looking at departments, going back to our budget on page 10. So this is a list, this ties to the LB-20 form, so it's a list of all the departments within that form, the total of the proposed resources and the total of the proposed requirements, and then it gives you the net income or loss. So you'll see peers and properties is by far the biggest department with about $2 million in net income. And then I do want to point out that when you look at the administrative and security departments, they do operate at a net loss, so to speak, but they're overhead departments, so that's the intent.
Can I stop you just for 1 second here?
Yeah.
I think this slide is super important, and I've talked about this a lot, but one of the things that was a priority when I was hired for this job was sort of, we had this broken model for how the port was operating financially, and we really focused at these levels by departments on making sure that at least operationally that each department was not having to be sub- not the case just 5-6 years ago. And in particular, if you look at areas like the airport, the boatyard, I mean, those have experienced significant increases. And so I think this slide tells a really good story about the progress the port has made. Now, obviously, the big gap here becomes the capital investment, the maintenance that's required for a lot of infrastructure that's non-operational, and making sure that, you know, operationally, hopefully, that you're covering enough of your expenses and have enough buffer to where you can pay for some of that other stuff, and hopefully in the future not be as reliant on outside sources like grants. But I think this is if I were to show one slide to people out of this presentation, it would be this one, as sort of a marker for how much progress we've made.
Yeah, and we're able to, later on in the presentation, we're going to get into a little more detail on each of these departments to talk about their operating performance and kind of have your comparisons, but that's very fun. Budget highlights, so this is from the bottom of page 10. So this basically just compares the budget that I'm presenting you with today with the budget that was approved or adopted for this current fiscal year. So ultimately, there is an increase of $213,000 from the prior year budget. And a big reason for that is because our budgeted grant income is up. So that's an increase of over $1 million from the current budget. Okay. All right, so page 11 is changes year over year. And I'm going to, we're not going to go through every single one of these. I'm going to save you guys from that. But I do just want to point out that what I'm doing here in this page is I'm trying to anticipate questions that people might have of significant changes from the current year to prior years. And again, it ties to the LB 20 forms on the back. So, like looking at the first one for property tax revenues, it's below the current adopted budget. So this is what's proposed, $1,058,000. It's below the current adopted budget, but above the first preceding year. So sometimes you'll hear me say that something is proposed at being lower than the current adopted budget, but keep in mind that it's still typically going to be an increase from prior year trends. It's just whether or not we hit the mark with this year's budget. Does that make sense? Okay, so I'm just going to ask if there are questions about anything from page 11, and then I do want to point out that we get into more detail when we get into the departmental sections later on.
I just want to point something out. I really like your little up and down arrows.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I was using a lot of words like above and below, yeah. And then I thought that
you simplifies things for me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Of course. All right, so I guess we can move on. Okay, so on page 12, we're going to look at capital spending. So I do want to say that it is the net capital spending is down slightly from the current adopted budget. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about the specific projects when we get to page 18. And then there's going to be a full list of all the proposed projects on page 23. So that $2.9 million number, we're going to talk about that in more detail later on. So any questions about this? Okay.
I got a question on debt service and the interest that we pay. Is that interest negotiable?
Well, most of our debt is through Business Oregon, and it's actually very competitive rates. We did refinance the loan for our Tier 1 building a few years ago when interest rates were a lot lower, and we got a pretty good deal on that. We have not been looking at refinancing lately. It's not seemed like a good time for it.
So you locked it in good?
Yeah. This Oregon, I think they're like 3.5% to 5%, kind of the average.
That's
so
good.
Very competitive. Yeah, especially these days, for sure. Okay, so looking at debt service, total notes payable is about $10.8 million. When you look at the table and you go back more than a few years, you see that these numbers here are very low, and that's because we had our COVID deferments through Business Oregon for those years. Any questions?
Did we have any kind of a callback were not necessarily penalty from business authority, but did we have to pay something for the use of those monies without having to live up to our commitment for the payment of it? Was there any kind of a quid pro quo?
So what they did was they just extended the terms of the loans. So they gave us 2 years off for making any payments. I mean, and then they just added 2 years to that payment
of the loan. Okay. But yeah. To answer your question, the revenue that would have been used to pay those loans did not exist in the sense that when we talk about our total $10.8 million, well, most of that is just in a couple loans. Like a big one is the Warnstein loan. And so we just passed through the same deferment that we had received to the customer because the port is just a pass-through on that. So it wasn't like we had all this money coming in from, say, Warnstein, and we just were using it on other things. Pretty much the revenue side as well as the debt payment got paused. Yeah, so just basically took the amortization table and moved it back 2 years.
How long is that for the United States at this stage? So 20 years or something?
No, it's sooner than that. Is it through 31?
Yeah, it's like 31.
Don't quote me, I think it's 31 now, but I can double check on that.
It's just a pass through, right? But it makes it. Yeah.
Just pass through. Do we receive anything on top of that? Our revenue, we're handling it. In other words, we've got a pass-through for all the revenue they pay us for paying off the state. Is there anything over and above that comes into our treasury?
So there's separate agreements and separate payments. So when it comes to the debt side of things, it is truly a pass-through. Bornstein pays us, we move that money onto the state. However, we have separate like lease agreements that they pay us that is above and beyond. So it's not as if Warrington's only paying the debt payment. We also get lease revenue from them, which is completely separate from the debt payment.
To his point, I think the county charges like 2.5% to administer everybody's money. Like whether you're the board or the school board or whatever, they take a cut of that for their administrative. It's significant, I think.
Yeah, that would have been a great idea back in the early 2000s to implement when we came up with this deal. I don't know
if this we should. I think it's crazy that they approve, but anyway.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
I think there should be some sort of margin there for the port and serving as an intermediary, because the other thing is customers are getting a far more competitive rate being able to use the port to go through the state for financing that they could just get on the private market.
Yeah.
I had one more question here. I can't find it here, but we had $100,000 that we had to write off last year for the boatyard and the mooring base. What, could you elaborate on that a little bit? What was our loss?
Yeah, so you're talking about a bad debt expense.
Bad debt.
Yeah, so I don't want to budget for bad debt. We don't want to anticipate that or see it, but it was unfortunate this year. We just found in going through some of the aging accounts receivables for the marina and the boatyard that there were some accounts that were past. Most of them are past the statute of limitations with the collection agency. It just needed to be
removed. Is that something like derelict boats or something we had to get rid of? Or?
Yeah, I mean, so the scenario is the customer is racks up, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 in bills, and then leaves and doesn't pay. If we don't have adequate collateral, then we have to send the account to collections, and then after 5 or 6 years, they have to write it off because it's past the statute of limitations.
Mm-hmm. So. We racked up bills against the port?
Yeah, so they use our services, we invoice them, and then and that was, I would call that kind of a one-time cleanup. We're on a better track now with the marine and boatyard collections. We're going to be more timely with addressing some of those things. Good question.
I guess they have a policy. We have a policy over there now that they make a judgment when a boat comes in to be pulled out as to whether or not they want to pull it out or whether they treat it safe. And it might become a derelict.
Yeah, so they have options for the customers where the customer can get a bond and then we have assurance when they take the vessel out. So to avoid this effect of the issue. fund, this contributes 63% of the total net operating income for the port. And then we're going to look at properties in a little more detail here. So the year-over-year change for properties is fairly low. It's only the budget comparison is fairly low. It's $4,000 over the current adopted budget, but it is $244,000 over the prior full fiscal year. Okay, so that's an 8% increase from the fiscal year ending 2024. And there's many reasons for this, but I would say our operating departments have been doing a very good job of getting new lease agreements, so we're at almost full capacity for existing properties, amending leases to bring them to market rate, and then sometimes trying to expand the leaseable areas like ecology. We have some investment in expanding the ecology area, and then we were able to negotiate a higher lease rate. So we're seeing that in the numbers here. I will say that the reason we're not seeing a bigger change from the current adopted budget is because this year's budget included lease income from the lot operators, as well as a bigger tenant that will be living at the end of the year. So.
Are there any new tenants on the horizon?
No. Matt?
Well, yes, but a lot of this is going to come to putting some new buildings up because we're pretty much full.
Yes, on the horizon, but not like the short term future for sure. Okay, so moving on to the boat yard on page 14. So we love talking about the boat yard because they're just blowing it out of the water. So my boat yard manager wanted a budget of $1 million in just haul out revenues. And I was a little shy about that, but I think he supported it. So it's 33% over the current adopted budget, but I would say that this year's budget was too low, and we expect it to keep growing. So I put this chart together where you can see, this is a great chart. So this was fiscal year 2021, $258,000. This is July through March. This is the current year, up to $635,000. So that's more than doubling in revenues in that short time period. And then if we added in what we made last year through April, May, and June, then he could be on track to make over $900,000 in just haul out revenues for this fiscal year. So we budgeted $1 million, which I think we can hit. Any questions about the boat yard?
Do the size of those boats have any impact on the total revenue that's generated?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, we're the all out fee is based on the length of the vessel.
Their customer service is exceptional. We've had a lot of fishermen come in testifying and tell us how great the boat yard and the staff are.
So that begs a question relative to, since I've been around, you're talking about different travel lift?
Stay tuned, that's coming up.
Also stay tuned, and Melanie will get into it, but these numbers are one of the reasons that we're proposing an added position in the boat yard to run that department with two people. And looking at the revenue and just the sheer volume of what's going on, I think there's past due time to get them some more help. A two-person department is actually very difficult to run. If they're both there on a given day, it works with two people, but of course, if somebody on vacation, then it's a one-person department, and now, you know, trying to take a break or go get something for lunch becomes difficult. So three people is really ideal in terms of a floor for what you want to run a department so that you can make sure it's staffed all the time.
Are there lights so that people can work on the boat at night? That's create a quicker turnaround, a more turnaround?
Yes.
I don't know if this is the time to ask, but are we paying a lot of overtime on account currently? Or?
We're getting some recently.
But
they do a pretty good job of managing it. But there's no doubt, I think, that there's definitely enough work. And Brendan's been asking for this for a while. And, of course, I'm always, when it comes to personnel, I want to be 110% positive it's the right move before we make a hire, because I never want to bring someone on and then 4 months tell me
through shifts. So the budget was based off of this crew schedule. This is what was recently published, plus just one maybe contingency visit next spring. And I do want to point out that last year's budget included these four Princess cruise ships, which were later canceled. So when I talk about the proposed budget and comparing it to the current year budget, there's a significant difference. One of the reasons is these four ships last year that were canceled, the net loss effect is almost $200,000. So it's not insignificant. But looking at our comparison, so the current cruise, just looking at the dockage component of the cruise budget, it's $426,000 in gross income, which is about $220,000. Down from the current adopted budget. We talked about the canceled Princess cruise ships. I also, so the last full fiscal year, 2023-24, was a significant year for us for miscellaneous dockage and then cruise dockage. We had a large vessel with a multi-day visit. This was unscheduled, unanticipated. It brought in $150,000 in revenues. So when I built the current year budget, I added some contingency if we got another visit. We didn't. The budget I'm proposing today does not have that built-in contingency. So I do want to say that this is, you're going to see it throughout, it's a fairly conservative budget. So if we do get big arrivals, if we do get unexpected revenue, I'd be more than happy to present a supplemental budget to the commission to celebrate that fact.
Can you tell me what our net profit is? Why don't we get a line for that?
Yeah, so I have the numbers here for you. If you look at your page 14 cruise ships, so each ship, and it is an average, okay? But it averages about $42,500 for your ocean-going vessels. The smaller river boats bring in about $2,400 for each of those. Okay, and then the proposed budget, the total net cruise budget is $564,000, and that includes all the revenues and all the expenses and the overhead. Does that answer your question? No? Just want something more?
No. I think we need to, in the coming years, do a little research because we're way cheaper than anybody up in the inlet. I think if you go online, you'll find out that UNO has 550 some callings a year, or did last year, and they've got a $45 a head tax on that for every person on that ship. They operate their two piers off of that revenue, and that's where they make it.
Is that a debarkation port, or is that just...
They're embarked. Yes, they are. We should all keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, of course, the net, does it reflect dredging?
It's not.
Okay, thank you.
No, that's a great point. I'll talk about that later. Yeah.
Well, we're all stuck there. That's
yeah.
So we don't have a net. Revenue for what we make on them. Unless everything is thrown in and deducted from the cost.
Only the dredging isn't accounted for, if I understand.
Thank you, Melanie.
Okay, so looking at the marina, which is on page 15 of your packet. So here we're going to focus on just the moorage for the marina as an indicator of growth. So the budget is $585,000 in gross moorage income. This is a modest increase from the current budget because the current year trends are down slightly from the prior year. So, but we do have expectations for moderate growth. So you can see year over year, revenues do go up. Any questions about marina? Looking at marina fuels, so that is at the bottom of page 15. So starting with the gas sales, marina net fuel profit. assets, the budget is $165,000, which is about $22,000 over the current adopted budget. Expectations for moderate growth again. And again, you'll see year over year over year, we do see growth with marina fuel sales. I think when we do the actuals from this current fiscal year, they might be down a little bit from the prior year. But yeah, questions? All right, so marina fuel, now we're looking at diesel. So the budget for diesel profits is down $10,000 from the current adopted budget, but again, it's up from prior actuals of $61,000. And that's because, so it's interesting, so I'll just say, so when I did the budget for this year, the $78,000, one thing that I looked at, because I didn't have these numbers here, so you're looking at this number and this number, and you're kind of seeing the growth there, and then you're looking at the current year trend. So that's when the current adopted budget can sometimes be a little overly optimistic, and then when you get the year actuals, you know, it didn't come out the way that you expected. So current year diesel sales are trending a little bit lower than what our budget expectations were, and so we're down from budget, but over the prior year. Questions? Okay. Okay, now looking at fuel sales at the airport. So the airport is interesting. And I talk a little bit about in the first paragraph that fuel sales tend to be subject to considerable month-to-month variability with weather, military operations, those seem to be the biggest contributing factors, but also just some unknowns. So when I put together last year's budget, it was the fuel sales at the airport were very, very strong. And so we were forecasting that maybe we would see that continued growth. We are still seeing growth at the airport with fuel sales, but not to the extent that it was budgeted for the current fiscal year. Okay?
You talked about military sales. Does that mean Coast Guard or not? Don't they buy their own fuel from someone else?
Yeah, it's not a Coast Guard at all.
Weren't we working on trying to work on that, trying to get...
We don't have the ability to get the Coast Guard. So it'd be nice, but you know, we have the fuel, you know, contractors.
Yeah, I just assume they're paying someone else to do it.
Yeah.
So this is a part of our fuels, that's probably what helps maintain the airport, right? So
yeah, there's something we'll be working on with the Coast Guard as far as they're contributing to the operations costs, because they've gone over a certain number of operations per day and per year. So that's something we'll be looking at in the future, but for right now, the fuel is...
Can we tax their fuel? Like road tax?
I don't think so.
That would be a benchmark, you know, usage.
You said that, I think you told me, Ed. In the last 2 months, we've had a record amount of fuel.
Yeah, we've sold over 17,000 gallons of jet 2 months in a row. So, and that's largely because of military.
For 2 months?
Yep, 2 months in a row.
2 months in a row, huh?
But so there's... Unscheduled military operations? Is that like Army National Guard?
Yeah, fill in the blank. So we, you guys have done a really good job about really pitching the airport, and we can support military operations on the abandoned runway. So word has gotten out. We're getting people from Florida, people from Missouri. facilities. So yeah, we're typically lower than SCAP boost by 5 to 10 cents a gallon.
Another great marketing tool is the flying events that we've been doing the last couple of years that are literally bringing thousands of people out to the airport. The involvement with like the Young Eagles program, I mean, I think that's excellent marketing for our airport, and it's helped volumes. One thing to note too, on when we're looking at fuel profits, and Matt kind of touched on it, but fuel profits at the airport are a little bit harder to predict based on volume because we do market-based pricing. And because the market you're competing with is so wide that often you kind of get a mismatch between what your fuel costs are and what you're going to sell it for. Now, obviously, you don't want to sell it for a loss, but based on kind of what the market is doing, there can be real variability in the amount of profit per gallon, whereas in the marina, we're just using a fixed cost-plus model, so we're not doing market-based pricing. So it's easier to predict based on volume and price. You can almost know what the profitability is going to be. So that's a kind of a difference in how we do things with marina fuel versus airport fuel.
Yeah,
we used to market the airport. We go up there at Puyallup, and we had a booth and a presentation for people who were walking by at a big convention for airplane owners. You know, we stopped doing that. It was all volunteers, but the airport manager was one of the guys that did it. And you can start that up again if you wanted to look at it.
The word has got out. Tacoma and Arrows have lost about half their gas sales to us. Or Chehalis down where we are, but a lot of them go there. A lot of competitors, they lost a lot of gas sales. Besides that, their taxes is higher over there too. And that helps us out a little.
Yeah, so we'll see that with the budget here for fuel. So it is down from the current adopted budget, current budget being overly optimistic. But you will see that the projected sales are 150,000, which is 73% increase from the fiscal year ending 2022. So that's significant. Okay. Similarly, when we look at avgas fuel, there's a slight dip from the current adopted budget, but the sales in the proposed budget are three times what the sales were, the net fuel profits from the fiscal year 2022. Threefold increase.
Cool.
Yeah. It's very cool. All right, so looking at peer revenues on page, starting on page 16 and then page 17 of your packet. Okay. So there's a decrease in the proposed budgeted dockage, or in this, I call this miscellaneous vessels, so it's not crews, not logs. And you'll see that the current budget for dockage of 656,000 is an increase from both the prior years. It's more than double what it was in fiscal year 2023, and that's because we just had this significant year in 24, and we assumed, you know, I built that in, but had that as my budget basis plus maybe some projected growth, okay? And then the current fiscal year trending is trending much lower. So when I've talked to our terminal manager about this, and I've tried to understand the market conditions and the reasons behind this, and it just seems like we will sometimes get these big vessels that have longer stays with us, and they bring in significant revenues. And it's very hard to forecast that. And so again, this is where I say, if I bring a supplemental budget, we're going to celebrate that we did get a big ship, big revenues, big expenses. But I'm just budgeting something more conservative for the coming fiscal year. So it's more based off of what we're getting in this year, plus some moderate growth. Okay. Any questions about that?
Things labeled miscellaneous are always hard to predict.
Yeah. Okay, and then log operations. There's just a reference to... the log operations, you'll see that the fiscal fiscal year 2024 brought in about $64,000. We had a big budget bill for this fiscal year, which we're going to fall short of those numbers. And then I did not add anything in the budget for water operations. So if conditions change, I'm sure we'll be presenting a supplemental budget to the commission for that. And then this is what I just said. So the budget is more conservative. I don't expect us to come in under these numbers. If we come in significantly above these numbers, then we'll be possibly reconvening this year. Well, let's see. Okay, and then now I think Deputy Director McGrath is going to be talking about the capital projects proposed in this budget. So starting on page 18, there's some narratives for the projects, but then if you turn to page 23, this is a list of every project that's in the budget with the proposed capital expenditure, grant funding, and then the ports portion of the expense for that.
All right, so just high level on a lot of these things, and when we get to page 23, if there's any questions, just fire away. So Pier 2 West obviously remains our highest priority. With the struggles that we've had obtaining permits for the mitigation with the city of Warrenton, the project is being pushed back a year. So not impossible to get through, but it does present some challenges that are going to cost us more than we had expected. One of the things that we're going to need to do is perform some emergency repairs on the west side of Pier 2 just to keep the pier operational for the time until the pier is reconstructed. So we were hoping to get into construction in November of this year, but that's not going to happen now. It will likely be November of next year. And so what we're going to see is some additional expenses for making the temporary repairs for infrastructure that we were going to be permanently fixing in the winter. So you'll see that in the in the chart on page 23, we've got the grant portion of it, and we also have some emergency repairs just to keep it viable for the next 3 years until the project is completed.
Could you explain what Warrenton did to inhibit this development?
Yeah, so when it comes to the mitigation piece, so basically the way that mitigation works is because we are filling water within state waters. So we're putting basically an acre's worth of fill in the Columbia River. So what that means is we need to dig an acre worth of water somewhere else to provide mitigation because they're concerned that it might rise above the floodplain. So you can imagine it's a little preposterous, but so what we've been working with Warrenton is mitigation plan that would allow us to take property that we own on the Skipton Peninsula and dig an acre's worth of water on that spot.
And you own it.
And we own it.
And they're telling you what you can't do with what you own.
Correct. So, and we're working through that. There's a number of objections that they have, and we've addressed those in the letters to the city planner that has been addressed several times. We're now just awaiting a scheduled meeting with the City Planning Commission to do a rendering on the project.
That's really a good neighbor relationship, isn't it?
Yes. So we should see that right now we've submitted the letter and told them to start the clock. Basically what they have is 120 days from the time that was submitted to render a decision.
Could your state representative have put a form in the water and messed with it? On your behalf?
Could have. There have been a lot of people that have been trying, but we just have not.
So my boss is late on it?
I don't know.
Well, you can move the name of all the former Senator Johnson has been involved.
Yeah, so we've had a number of people working on it. We just haven't been fruitful to this point. So I think we'll get there. It's just a lot more difficult. Okay, and then Pier 2 Two East, moving to page 19. So Pier Two East is not in as bad as in condition as Pier Two West, but it also has some repairs that are going to need to be made. On both sides of the pier, there are weight restrictions. For Pier Two West, we're going to be repairing temporary spaces that will just give a corridor and allow operations to continue until the project is completed. And then on Pier 2 East, we're looking at repairing as is, and doing that in a way that will give us another probably 20 to 30 years of life on that pier. So not going to be behind a sheet pile wall, but just repairing with timber post-construction. And with the boatyard, this is an exciting time for us. That this is really a new, it's kind of a new dynamic for us. We haven't been in the full development mode for a while around here, so we're working on getting a lot of new infrastructure for the boatyard. Going back to what you were talking about previously, John, is the new travel lift. We're submitting a grant to get a new 150-ton lift that we can use with the existing infrastructure out there. What we'll be looking at is a small shipyard grant from MARAD that will act as funds to supplement the FEMA funds that we already have for it. So if you recall, there was FEMA funds that were left over, and because we had that spot on Pier 3 that we weren't going to repair, FEMA allowed us to do an alternative project. And so with an alternative project, they said, okay, you're going to spend this $600,000, we have to reduce it by a small percentage, but we can give you $570,000 to contribute to a lift. So that's what we're going to be using.
Is there a match in there, Dean?
There is going to be a match, yes. It's about a $1.4 million lift, but between the MARAD funds that we're going for and FEMA, I think that the match is going to be minimal.
Maybe some urban redevelopment funds from the city?
Yeah, so. Yeah, work on that, for sure.
So it's not rhetorical meetings, people.
Yeah, and then the other side of this is that we are in the middle of finalizing a request for proposals for both our phase one and build out. So what that's going to be is looking at a lot of the river renewal side of things, so the civil engineering, the geotech work that needs to be done, construct a big building so that we can start bringing in vessels out of the weather, and then also have a basically the first phase of the light industrial buildings on the south side of Pier 3.
And that's outlined in the Boatyard Master Plan, is it not?
Correct.
So there's a document that's available.
Yeah. And as Greg Rison was saying, what our hope is to be able to tag into urban renewal funds to start helping with the planning. It's not an insignificant cost. There's a lot of utilities, a lot of engineering, a lot of design work that needs to be done. And on the east side, going to the East Basin Marina, obviously we took the East Basin Causeway down. There's really two things that we're looking at right now. The East Basin is get the dredging done. We need to have close to 200,000 cubic yards removed there. The first phase of that will be 35,000 cubic yards to be removed right around the boat ramp to keep that viable, because it's in danger. Everybody's been out there, it's filled in quite a bit. So we already have a commission approval to get the $762,000 from Ferguson Construction, get that done. And we are also waiting on word for State Bill 360, or Senate Bill 361, that is looking to pay for half of that dredging cost. So about
there.
Who's going to pay for half of it?
State.
State?
State. Yeah,
so. And that's currently sitting in the revenue committee.
What's that?
That's currently sitting in the revenue committee.
Yeah. So, and Bergerson was good enough that they basically gave us this year's numbers at last year's prices.
They going to do that flow line?
Yes.
Why don't they book that bridge? You got plenty of room in here.
That's the equipment that they have. So, and the discharge location is about 3,500 feet. So it's just going to be easier to handle.
Long drive for a bucket.
And one of the other things with the East Mooring Basin is the floating docks at the boat ramp. They're old and need to be replaced. So we've submitted a grant to the Oregon State Marine Board. It's a $400,000 cost to replace all of those docks. We submitted a grant to OSMB for $312,000 of that $400,000. And Oregon State Marine Board, they haven't guaranteed this, so it looks pretty favorable.
These are the repairs next to the ramp?
Yes. Oh, pardon?
I've heard that the Oregon State Marine Board is good to work with.
They're some of the best folks that I've worked with.
Are they going to put them back in logs, or how are they going to do it? Or are they going to have, there's nothing in a log cube that makes your greatest float you've ever seen in your life.
We're looking at the, what we spec'd out was Oregon State Marine Board specs. So they've spec'd these out, and we've already got the engineering from them for.
Maybe that's those.
It may be. I don't know.
You don't know whether it's wooden logs or what, huh?
Yeah, well, it's, again, it will be similar to what we're dealing with now, but they are spec'd out so that Oregon State Marine Board knows that they can approve it, and they know what the engineering is and what the manufacturer is. And then with the airport, we're continuing with the upgrades there. If you've looked at the paper or looked on the website recently, we've got a request for proposals up currently for phase one of the airport industrial park development. So we're evaluating six different proposals right now, and we're in a really good spot in that we have three really good proposals. So we have one more interview to do, but that should be coming to the commission very shortly. This meeting will likely be a screening in June, and that will look at doing the civil work to put up two 10,000 square foot light industrial buildings on the northwest corner of the airport industrial park adjacent to school.
10,000 square feet?
Two buildings, correct.
I think that's probably a good idea. There is not a rental anywhere on this coastline.
Yeah, and one of the things, if you look at the just what the port has been selling out here in the last few years is on the property side. And what's great about once we build something like that, it's just kind of this residual income. There's not a whole lot of maintenance that goes along with it. So where the airport industrial park is concerned, or any small GA airport, developing the land side resources is really what's going to keep the airport viable for many, many years to come. So
I agree with that.
And then we have a couple of upgrades coming with the FBO. So we did get the grant through Oregon Department of Aviation Corps grant. It's about a $200,000 grant to replace the bathrooms in there, get those completely redone. And then one of the things we'll be looking at as well is doing some planning and looking at expanding the FBO, potentially some conference space, two-story structure with a fishbowl on the second story with a viewing platform on top of that. So we'll be looking at going out and designs for that. And, yeah, I think those are the highlights. If you want to look at page 23 or any questions, I'm happy to see you again.
Symbiosis?
What's that?
Symbiosis.
Industrial symbiosis is something we're continuing to look at and work on. I know that one of the bills is actually in the Ways and Means sitting there right now. I just got word this morning on that. As far as the Byproduct Recovery Center, we're pausing on that. We need to do some deeper dive on the information and the phase two costs, and then what the processes are going to be willing to absorb.
So let's talk about the dredging for a moment. I followed what you were saying about the East Mooring Basin. So the proposed expenditures are they based on contracting this dredging out?
Yes.
Okay, do we know with whom, or have we got that far down the road yet?
We don't. We have a request for proposals, again, drafted already. That should be
and west?
For the west, we've got the east handled.
Okay.
What we're, not the west and Morning Basin, but just the waterfront.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, we had a meeting with the Corps of Engineers yesterday. So our intent was to hopefully get the Turning Basin moved towards the center of the dock. Wanted to get that, see if they would dredge that. They won't do that. The Corps has a hard and fast rule that they will not dredge anything that provides a berth for any entity. So we're not going to be able to do that. But
does it give you a site for that?
A site? No, they didn't. They said it's a rule and they don't have anything in the works.
I wonder if it's in the CFRs or if it's just an internal rule which could be changed with a stroke of a pen.
You understand your comment?
No, the Turning Basin. So the Turning Basin is right off of the.
Oh, yeah, so they point that right down to the. Right down below the skipping on.
Yeah.
Two disposal sites there.
Yeah, so they can adjust the Turning Basin. With and to the north, but not to the south, because that is it comes on the port property.
They got to go clear to the channel.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know,
but
what
they
I mean?
Can't. They can't dredge within 100 feet.
Yeah, but is it in the Code of Federal Regulations, or is
yes.
it just
yes, it is,
or is it internal to the Corps of Engineers?
There's only one port that gets dredging all the way to the pier, and that's a strategic port, which is Anchorage, Alaska.
And then the other side of this is that one of the things that we've been talking with the Corps about is tagging on to their contractors when they come down and do the Turning Basin work. So if they have, you know, whether it's Manson or they have HME or anyone come down, we're wanting to be able to tag into those contractors, because if we are able to do that, then we would basically have zero mobilization costs, which is a huge, huge
yeah.
thing for
yeah.
us.
They try to keep those in the small business category, which is like that.
Sure. The struggle, however, is that if you look at what the Corps is doing on the dredging side, a lot of times they're out here dredging in September and October, where our permit doesn't allow us to dredge until November. So when we tried to talk with them about that, hey, can we tag into yours? They said, well, your permit doesn't allow it, even though it's like literally on the same line. So one of the things that we're working on with National Marine Fisheries right now is to get that window changed, and our intent is to get that changed to September. So if we can get that from September through February, then we can submit any of the dredging information and requests to the Corps, and the Corps charges a minimal charge, it's like $6,000 to administer it, but they actually add the ports of dredging as an option to the bucket dredging that would be done down here.
So you get them to add that to the channel dredging. There is no fish window in the under the channel,
yeah.
period. It's 365 days a year.
Yeah,
so
they're trying to convince them that is interesting.
Property tax at this time?
So the property tax, the levy.
more money from the property tax?
No.
You have to take it from somebody else.
It's Measure 5 limitation, you can't.
You can ask.
Everybody goes up 3% too, right? Every year the thing goes up.
Well, our millage rate does not go up. It stays at the 0.1256 per thousand of assessed value. But what goes up is the property tax assessment, which is capped at 3%.
Yeah.
But of course, that there's variability in that, because if all houses remain on the roll, no new builds, nothing going off the tax roll, then you would know it would go up exactly 3%. But there's variability in the number of taxable properties on the roll, so it's not always a 3% increase total.
Generally, every entity takes what they can get.
Okay. No other comments? Okay. Next item then would be setting the next date for the next meeting, or